the line.
Uh-oh.
Being recorded.
All right, everyone. This is Teresa, and I have muted everyone who's not a speaker, so hopefully this will work so that we get a clear line out to everyone. I'm Teresa Stern, and I'm the Vice President of Outreach, Admissions, and Alumni Services, and I'm super happy to have this great speaker series to offer to you today. I want to thank our Alumni Association board member, Amit Ahuja, for putting together the program today. Very much appreciate his organizational skills and for bringing our illustrious guests together. We're going to spend a little time getting to know these folks and then in hearing about their adventures and activities, and then we'll have some time to answer questions. So I will unmute the line when it's time to open it up to questions. So we have three adventurous speakers today that we're going to hear from. We have Jason Michel from Toronto, Canada. Jason is a lawyer, so we forgive him for that. And but he's a mountain climber, amazing mountain climber. He's going to talk about some of his climbing and other activities. He's set to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Our next speaker will be Jack Heim, and he is also an Alumni Association board member, as is Jason. And Jack is a rock climbing extraordinaire, and he works at the University of Madison, and he is also just running and some other activities I think he's going to share with us. And then our third speaker is Janice. So we have the J's today. Jason, Jack, and Janice. So Janice is our third speaker. She comes to us from Lodi, California. And she is an amazing archer and has won many medals in the sport. So she'll tell us a little bit about that and how we might be able to get involved. I would be interested in that. I'm not so interested in climbing rocks, but a bow that I might be able to not wouldn't scare me as much. But anyway, and so she actually is on the board at Sex Society for the Blind and Discovery Blind Sports and is a assistive tech person. And all three of these fabulous J's are also Guide Dogs for the Blind graduates. And so they'll talk to us a little bit about how they accommodate their guide dog life and their sporting life. So why don't we go ahead, Jason, and start with you?
Okay. Thanks, Teresa. Hi, everybody. So I think we have about 10 minutes. So, Teresa, if you want to, give me, a two-minute warning or something, in case I'm not already finished. Do you keep time?
I can do
kinda
that.
Like the gong show?
Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
I'll send in the hook.
Okay. Yes. Get the hook out. And get me out of here. So I'm Jason, and I live in Toronto with my guide dog, Kailua, who's a lovely black lab, and we live in the city. And so I think the key is we try and stay active. So I, in general, I try to work out 3 to 4 times a week, and I try to do things like run, and I have a tandem bike. I do try and, at least when the weather's cooperating, do that when I can. Some things I can do with my dog, some things I can't. But my current goal, and I've done things like I've done mini triathlons and I've done long distance bike rides and I've taken my dog running. I've gone to climbing gyms. I'm sure that Jack will talk more about that. But my current goal that I'm focusing on right now is some friends and I are planning on climbing up Mount Kilimanjaro. We're currently planning on leaving August 30th of next year, 2020, for a September 1st 8-day climb. I could not think of a way to actually bring my dog on the climb, so I don't think I think Carlilo is going to have that week off. I'm training for that, and I have various things that I do. Some things I can do with my dog, and some things I can't. For example, one thing I'm doing a lot of is hiking. because when you climb Mount Kilimanjaro, it's not a climb in the sense of you're like using equipment and harnesses and ropes like that. It's a hike, and you kind of, what you do is you zigzag up the mountain. So although the altitude's very high and it's quite grueling and the weather can get quite challenging, you're basically on a big long hike at a very high altitude and a very steep level, and you're basically camping for a week. But it is kind of that. So one thing I do with my dog is one of my trainers gave me a weighted backpack. It's like a 50-pound weights in the backpack, and you carry that and you just walk up and down hills and hike around, and it sort of simulates or gets you in shape for the endurance to do the climb. You're not going to have to run. You're not going to have to do like speedy things, but you're going to have a lot of endurance. So that's one thing that I do with my dog. I can just go around. I have a lot of places around my building where I can go to walk. There's some trails, et cetera, that are fairly easy to navigate. But getting on that backpack and walking around is one of the things that I can do where my dog does help me to train. And just generally, get it. Well, I'm also trained to do some sprint triathlons, and part of that is swimming. My dog does swim, and I do swim with her for fun, but not necessarily laps, but she has to get me to the pool. So even having a guide dog just to get to and from places that you're doing your training is also very important. So one of the pools that I go to is in a part of town that's not terribly accessible. You've got to take a streetcar to get there. There's a bit of a walk, and having a guide dog just to get oneself there and back is quite invaluable. I have not yet found a way I can bring my dog on the tandem bike. I've thought about getting maybe a little cart, little passenger kind of thing that goes on the side, but haven't quite gotten to that yet. So it's like some things, like tandem biking and indoor rock climbing. I mean, other than getting you there and back, it's hard to get your dog directly involved, but certainly they're how you get there and they're how you get home again. So they really is what make it happen for you. So basically, that's kind of what I do. So in terms of the training, I do a lot of endurance work. I do a lot of treadmill. I do the hiking with my dog with the weighted backpack. I haven't quite figured out what I'm going to do for altitude training. That might be maybe some longer hikes up in the mountains, which we don't have much of here in Ontario. So haven't quite figured that one out yet, but we'll try some things. But I think that having a guide dog just in general makes one, in my view, much more active. When I was a cane user, I was much less likely to go out and just go for a walk or go for a hike on my own. It just wasn't as fun for me. When you have a guide dog, of course, new worlds open up. So not only am I not afraid to do it, I'm actually excited to get out there and walk her around and find new places. So, but I do have some organizations to recommend to you. So I run with Achilles International, which is all over North America. It's in Canada. It's all over the States. They're based in New York. And I do some running with them. And I'm doing some triathlon training with them as well. So what they do is they provide basically guides, running guides. Some people run with their dogs. Some people don't. It depends on, I guess, how well they're trained their dog is to run with them and how long the distance is and whatnot. But usually Achilles, if you don't run with your dog, they'll have a volunteer dog holder so that when you're doing the run, you don't have to worry about leaving your dog because someone will hold on to your dog until you get back. So they're very accommodating in that way. I've also done some work recently for folks that may be in Canada, the Canadian Adaptive Climbing Association, and they do adaptive rock climbing. I've only done indoor stuff with them, but I assume they might do outdoor stuff too. And for those who are in Ontario, I'm also part of a tandem bike club called Trailblazers that own a series of tandem bikes, and they provide what's called the stoker, the person that goes on the back, generally the blind person, hopefully, with the captain who goes in the front, generally a sighted person. So that group actually pairs up stokers with captains. And I've also dabbled a bit in golf. And again, if you're not using a golf cart, your guide dog can help get you around the golf course from one hole to another. So although they're not actually physically playing golf with you, they're certainly getting you on the course and on and off the green and around all the holes. So that's really all I have. I've done something I've never done before. She's actually finished a bit early. But subject to any questions, those are my 2 cents.
Great. Thank you so much, Jason. And like I said, we'll open up to questions after we've heard from all three of our fabulous panelists.
Fantastic.
So, Jack, you're up.
Okay. My name is Jack Heim. I manage the high performance computers for the math department at the University of Wisconsin. I'm on my third dog. Current dog's name is Scout. I just got him last September from GDB, but he's two, a yellow lab. My activities are running, hiking, rock climbing, and a few other things. I have done one triathlon. I won a silver medal in the Badger State Games. It's like the sort of a prep. I think every state has sort of a Olympic-like competition. And that's the Badger State Games. I won a silver medal in the 800-meter freestyle swimming. I've also been in a lot of 10K races. Pretty much do that, just, you know, 3-4 a year probably. I got into all these activities starting when I went blind around 22. It was a gradual thing, but I made up my mind to say yes to everything. So when somebody says, you want to try this? Yes. You want to try this? Yes. I always say yes. And as a result, I've eaten a lot of weird stuff, drank a lot of weird stuff, but also had a lot of fun.
Sounds like fear factor.
Yeah. I got into scuba and sailing at one time, but I just decided that those events aren't for me because, well, scuba, for instance, you already can't see and then can't hear anything either. And I just thought, you know, it wasn't as much fun as the things that I have chosen to do. And probably my the thing that I'm into most, although, you know, like I go running several times every week, but I'm really into rock climbing. And I do that with a group called Adaptive Adventures. They're out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. They have adaptive rock climbing clinics indoors in a lot of cities around the country. And I'm lucky enough to have one in Madison, where I live. So once a month, I go on in, to an adaptive rock climbing clinic indoors. But then a couple of times a year, they have outdoor rock climbing trips, and these are usually 3 or 4 days at a state park. So it's a combination of camping, hiking, and rock climbing. Now, when I'm going rock climbing with Adaptive Adventures, I take my dog, and like Jason said, you use the dog to get you around while you're hiking and camping. The dog, I have a rock climbing harness for my dog Scout, but it's only as a safety precaution. So a lot of times the trails up to the cliffs where you do the actual climbing can get pretty rough. There's some pretty harsh climbing to do there. And so Adaptive Adventures likes to have a harness so that they can put the dog, rope the dog in like a regular climber, to make sure he doesn't fall. But the dog's feet almost never leave the ground. So he's not actually doing any climbing in harness. it'll explain a little bit the kind of climbing that Adaptive Adventures does. Like I said, they'll take you to a state park. There's Devil's Lake in Wisconsin and Mississippi Palisades in Illinois are the two that I've been to. And there they'll have usually limestone cliffs somewhere between 30 to 70 feet high. An experienced climber puts ropes up first, so they're thoroughly anchored at the top. And then the disabled climbers are roped in, so you can't fall. I mean, it would take an incredible series of mistakes for something to happen. So you're roped in the whole time, and it's really safe. But the majority of climbers are missing a limb. There are a handful of blind climbers, but as far as I know, I'm the only one who brings their dog along. I'm the only dog handler that I know of who also does rock climbing. Let's see. As I mentioned, I do run a couple of times, two or three times a week, and mostly I do that with friends. My friends are all in a group called the Hash House here, Harriers. This is a very informal group. You're not going to find any membership dues or organization like that. It was started by some British runners in Indonesia back in the 50s and gradually spread around the world. It's just a group for people who like to get together and run. In fact, what they call themselves is a drinking group with a running problem. So what you do is friends gather together and then often, you know, you go run maybe in half an hour, stop at a bar, have a drink, run another half an hour, stop and have a drink. And so what we do once a week, they start running from my house. We run a half an hour, 3 miles or so, 3.5, and then we get back and sit around my house and drink my beer. So you could probably, anybody who's interested in getting into running could probably find a Hash House Harriers group in their local community, and you can connect up with those people, and they'll take you running all right, especially if you're willing to supply the beer at the end of the run. When I run, I do usually take my dog along with not in harness, just on a leash, heeled in, and he really loves it. In fact, the first time that I put him on tie down when my running buddies came over, he realized he wasn't going to get to come along on the run with us, and he literally cried as if he was in pain. My wife thought I had hurt him somehow. That's how upset he was that he wasn't going to get to come running with us. He loves running. He doesn't have to work very hard to keep up with me. You know, I probably do when I'm outdoors, maybe 6-7 miles an hour tops. And so he can just trot alongside, and half an hour of that kind of activity, 40 minutes of something like that isn't, you know, it's not difficult for him at all to keep up with that. Of course, I got him in September, so we haven't had any hot weather yet. And I'm thinking the cutoff point to leave him home will probably be about 75 degrees Fahrenheit. But that hasn't come up yet. I guess that's about it. That's all I have.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks so much. You guys make me feel super lazy. All right. Janice, we're going to move on to you. And I'd love to hear about all your recreational activities and especially archery.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for inviting me to this group this evening. I appreciate that. And I love the opportunity to talk about archery. My guide is Vargo, and he's a yellow lab. I've had him, it'll be 2 years in July. He's my fourth dog and from guide dogs. I do different activities. I have done, like, I think it was, I forget, Jack or Jason said, you try just about everything. Mostly I'm willing to try just about everything. I won't skydive or bungee jump. Those don't appeal to me. and scuba diving doesn't either appeal to me because of that reason. The whole point to me to scuba diving is to be able to see the beautiful things down there. And if you can't see them or feel them or hear them, I think I would be very claustrophobic anyway. But I've been legally blind all my life, totally blind probably for the last 15 years. And my dad taught me how to water ski when I was 8 years old. So I've done that. My husband, when we met, had a love for snow skiing. And so he became a guide, a sighted guide for snow skiing for blind people, and learned how to do that. And then he taught me how to snow ski. But when I fell and broke my arm snow skiing, I decided that archery was more important than snow skiing. So that's kind of gone on the back burner. But also we have a tandem bike, which is a lot of fun. And we do have a little cart that we bought when we bought the tandem, like a child, you would put a child in. And Courtney took my husband took the seat out and put just cushions, and so we can pull my guide dog with us in the little cart, and that works out really nicely. And it does give you a little more of a workout because you're pulling 70 pounds behind you that you didn't have. Unfortunately, tandem has taken a back seat to a Harley now, and that's what my husband prefers. So can't, unless we get a sidecar, Vargo can't go with us on the Harley, unfortunately. but archery, I will get to archery, is my real love and my husband. I got into archery because Courtney was doing it. He was shooting. He joined a local club in Sacramento, and they were having a lot of fun with it. And I was sitting, you know, I go with him to practices, and then he started to compete in California competitions, and so I would accompany him to those, and I would sit on the sidelines, and I'd do my crocheting, and I'd do my homework when I was working on my bachelor's degree, and that was fine. But then I thought, you know, I'd really like to see what does it feel like to shoot a bow and you know, shoot that arrow here. Hear it hit the target, and what is that all about? What's it feel like? So I started doing some internet searches. This was back in 2003, and I started doing some internet searches to see who, is there anyone out there who's blind that shoots archery, and what technique do they use to shoot a bow? So, you know, for aiming purposes. And the only thing at that time that I could find was British Blind Sports. Had an archery program, and I wrote to them, I emailed them and said, how do you do it? What's the technique you use? And they sent pictures and explained how it works. And so my husband built the setup for me, and I started shooting with the local archery club that he was in. And so this technique is called tactile archery, or I've seen it lately called touch sighting or tactile sighting. And it's very simple. It's not high tech, but it is the technique that is used, that is sanctioned by World Archery, which is the archery, the international governing body that oversees archery for able-body and Paralympic sport. And it's basically a foot locator, which is a bar or a piece of aluminum that goes, we're talking about target archery, where the targets are, you shoot from a fixed shooting line, and the targets are out in a field, an open field, a range they call it. So the foot marker is placed across the shooting line because everybody straddles the shooting line. Okay, so now I have this foot locator so that I know where to stand and that I'm standing in the same spot every time I go to shoot. A sighted person can see where their feet are placed on that shooting line. I can't look down and see where my feet are, so this foot locator helps, you know, me to locate the proper place every time I go back to the shooting line. Then there's a tripod that is attached to that foot locator, and it is on the target side of the foot locator. So I shoot right-handed, so my tripod is directly to my left. So when you straddle the shooting line and you are facing down the shooting line, okay, the targets are to your left. And so on top of that tripod is a sight. Now, it's this. I use the same sight that a sighted person uses that they attach to their bow and they look through, but mine goes on the tripod, and when I lift my bow and draw back the string, the hand that is holding on to the bow, I use that to touch the sight that's on top of my tripod. Now I know I'm aiming towards the targets and at the right height. And so everything else is like everybody else has to shoot. When you shoot a bow, just like when you play golf or tennis, you have to perform that shot consistently, using, you know, good form, and do it consistently every time in order for the arrows to go where you want them to go. Like anybody else, that's the trick, is getting that good form. Sighting, I consider to be maybe 5% of your shot. It's very important, obviously, to aim, but aiming is there. It's performing the shot properly and really learning how to shoot the bow. And the technique for shooting the bow isn't any different than the technique for a sighted person. The only real difference is how we sight. And we sight by touch instead of with our eyes. My scores are not as high as sighted archers because there's when you're blind, when you can't see, there's the typical things that come into play with that, and one of the biggest thing is body sway. You can't, a sighted person has body sway, but when they're at full draw and looking at the, you know, in through their sight and at the target, they can see if they start to move and they can fix it. We can't see it, we have to feel it, and the movement is very minor, very minimal, and that minimal movement that we make is going to send your arrows off the target. So it's so that's, you know, more the difficulty. We don't use audio. Some people think, and there are some camps that use audio sound for aiming at, but that's not the sanctioned, the approved technique for when you want to get into international competition. And the big problem with audio would be when does technology fail you most commonly, most often? It's when you need it the most. And so I wouldn't want to rely on anything like that electronic to help me aim mostly for that reason. Let's see. Archery is a great sport for a couple of different reasons. Number one, it's a sport that as a blind person or as a person who knows a blind person, is not a sport that you would automatically assume that a blind person can do. So the fact that you can do it makes you feel really good and really opens up your mind to other possibilities. So it's a great sport for rehabilitation reasons, and for, you know, for kids, for anybody who's, for it's a great sport for anybody. It's all ages do it, all abilities can do it. It can be adapted for a lot of different disabilities. But it's something that if you bring it to somebody, we've done clinics for visually impaired. We worked with Foundation for the Junior Blind and done clinics with them. And here's a sport where you think, oh, I never, why, how would I ever be able to do archery? And then they can, and then they think, wow, I wonder what else I've thought in my life I couldn't do, and maybe I was wrong. And that's, you know, what I really love about the sport. The other thing is this technique, simple, low tech, you know, aiming. Once your equipment is set on the line and lined up with the target, you are very independent. So now I can adjust. I can make my own adjustments based on where my arrows are hitting on the target. I do need somebody to call my arrows for me where they're landing on the target, or I tie a rope from my tripod down to the target and I can walk down there and feel where my arrows are landing and pull my own arrows. I can be independent. Somebody doesn't have to walk me during practice back and forth. And I can make my own adjustments to my equipment as far as aiming goes. And so you can own that shot. You shoot a bad shot, you own it. It's not because the person telling you where your arrows are landing, you know, does something and so you can blame them or they can blame themselves, you know. And when you shoot a good shot, you can own that too and say, hey, I did that. I shot a good shot. Sometimes I've had spotters before that, oh, I'm sorry, oh, I'll do better next time. It's like, you know what? It's not about you. it's okay. You're just calling the arrows. It's me. I have to fix this but there's nothing that you're causing me to do bad or good. So I really like that about the sport. Let's see. Oh, and the inclusiveness of it. Archers are really really great people, and like I say, all abilities do it. When I started shooting with the club, I had no idea that I was, you know, how far it would take me, because I just wanted to see what it was like. And then I asked, when my husband was competing in California events, I asked if I could compete, even though there was no category for me, and they said yes, I could compete as a guest. And then it was like 6 months later, and they voted to make it a category, visually impaired, for the state of California. So then I had a category, and then we decided we wanted to shoot the U.S. Nationals, and they'd never had a blind archer before, and I called them and said, would you let me shoot in your tournament? And they said yes, and I was the first blind archer ever to shoot at U.S. Nationals. And so that was, it just kind of, everything, it just kind of fell into place. Then I was asked by the Paralympic coach if I wanted to compete at the World Championships in 2007, because it was the first time they were going to have visually impaired archery there. And so I never would have thought that I would have been shooting at World Championships after 3 years of shooting archery. But it was a wonderful experience, and I wound up winning the silver medal that time, and that was just not even, I had no idea that was going to be a possibility. So I've been to two World Championships since, in Czech Republic and then in Germany 4 years ago, and I won the gold medal in Germany 4 years ago, and now this June I'm going back to the Netherlands. Is in June the World Championships for Paralympic, and so I'm really looking forward. Until last year I had the outdoor record, but the Italian beat my record last year at European Nationals. So we were chatting on Messenger, and I told him that that was my record that he beat, and that I want it back. So we have a friendly little competition going there. And I have the indoor record right now for which I sent last year in Andorra, what they had an international tournament just for visually impaired. The constraints that you might have, and tell me, Teresa, if I'm going too long, equipment. Okay, you have to buy. You need the same equipment that anyone else getting into archery would need: the bow, the arrows, the little accessories. Once you've purchased those, it's kind of like with golf. Once you've got your golf clubs, you've got them. So it's not like you have to buy new ones every year. Arrows you do if you lose them or break them. But once you've got your basic equipment, you're pretty good. The sighting equipment is built. There is no company that makes the tactile sight. Everybody makes their own. Somebody makes it for them. And my husband has built them my setup, which he feels he really likes my setup because we've really worked hard in the last, 15 years or whatever, to make it portable, durable, and adjustable, which is very important for that equipment. And so he builds them in the garage when people ask, and he just charges for the materials cost. Otherwise, somebody can look at, we have a website, they can look at the, how he talks about on the website how to build it, and they could build their own. But there really isn't a company where you get them from. So that's what you need. Then you need to find an archery club or an archery shop and tell them that you'd like to shoot archery. And, of course, at first they may say that's not possible. I have a website called seenolimits.org. And on my website, I talk about how it's done, what the technique is, what the equipment is. And there's also an email where you can send me an email. And if the shop owner, coaches, whoever, don't understand how it's done, want to learn more how it's done, they can contact me. I and Courtney were more than willing to help people get started. Once a person sees what it entails, they're not so afraid of it. But to think they a little bit, sometimes they may be a little worried about a blind person shooting. So it's the biggest barrier that a blind person has to archery that we've found really is being able to get to the range and somebody to help you get initially set up. And the biggest reason for that, I think, is that sometimes the sighted community sees blind people as a burden. Once I commit to this person, now I'm stuck with this person and I've got to help them out. We try and be as independent, as blind people, as independent as we can. No reason that you couldn't get to and from the range, except that's on public transportation, carrying your equipment, your bow and arrows and your sighting thing. It's a little cumbersome, but also, I don't know how buses feel about carrying bows, bows and arrows on the bus or on the train. Those are barriers for us. Those are things that are a little bit more, make it a little more difficult. If you had a family member or a friend that was interested in archery, that's the best case scenario. Let's do it together, because we've found that if you can get the person that's supporting the blind person, that's the friend of the blind person, interested in it, and most people that we teach it to that do it for the first time really fall in love with it. We've found very few people that don't like the sport when they get introduced to it. So if you can find somebody who would like to do it with you, that's the perfect scenario. And that's why I've been able to be as successful as I have been, because Courtney loves the sport too and also competes. So I'm very lucky that way. Nationally, internationally, the difficulties are internationally, it is a struggle, a continuing struggle for visually impaired archers to get accepted at that level by World Archery because of our numbers, and it's because the problems that we have with our national governing bodies. Number one, they don't support us at all financially, so we have to self-fund, unlike the other Paralympic archers who can qualify for the national team and then can be funded. Visually impaired archers right now aren't on the national team, so we have to self-fund. That's expensive to get to world championships. The other thing is some countries' national governing bodies won't even allow their visually impaired archers to go to the world championships because visually impaired archery is not yet on the full Paralympic Games level. It's at the world championships, but we can't go to the full Paralympic Games yet because our numbers aren't up. So those national teams won't even allow the visually impaired archer to participate in the world championships, which is really frustrating. And so those are barriers that we're fighting right now at the international level. I've told you about my website, seenolimits.org. That's where you can find out and ask questions about how we do it. And okay, the last thing was the role of my guide in my activity. Okay, we do target archery mostly. We do field archery, which is a little different style, for fun. And target archery, the role of my guide is to be calm and sit with me on the when I'm not shooting, back at the under the tent, and just be calm and be there with me and enjoy the outdoors. And I can put my hand down, and he's a calming influence. So he doesn't have a big role in target archery, except being my companion. But field archery is where you shoot at targets. You have to hike, so it's like in a forest or in a hilly setting, and you follow trails to each target, and then you stop and you shoot that target, and then you move on to the next target. So Courtney carries the bows, and I have my walking stick, and I have Vargo, and Vargo guides me on the trails for that kind of archery, and it's really neat and a great experience. And he loves getting out in the wilderness, and so that's how he helps me with archery. And I think that's
great. Thank you so much, Janice. I think I'm feeling kind of inspired. It sounds like having some more archers would help the cause a little bit.
Very much.
In a minute here, I'm going to open up the lines for people who have questions. But I also just wanted to say that, before I opened, I was just going to say, recreation is different for everyone. I love that in this panel today we've had, different types of recreation. And we'd love to hear more about what other people are doing. To get out there and do different things, and maybe it's an art, something you do for art, knitting or ceramics or all kinds of things, but just the way that you do it and sort of how you do it and how your dog plays a role. And if anybody's interested in submitting articles to Alumni News on those subjects, I think that we would all love to hear more from everybody who's out there with what they do and what they enjoy and how to get involved. So with that said, I'm going to open up the line for questions. And if you are not asking a question, it would be great to have your line muted. And I'm looking up right now how to mute your personal line. Is *2 is to mute, and *2 is unmute. So, but I'm going to unmute everybody right now. So, the power.
Wow, she has the power.
Well, this is Yvonne. I have a
Hello,
question.
Hello, Yvonne.
Hi. My guide dog is Tippy. She's a small black lab. And I know none of the wonderful panelists spoke about it today, but I've heard of a number of individuals who like to go on hikes, and they have a special harness where they walk behind their dog so the dog can pick the footing And I was just wondering, where do people look and get special harnesses for different events and different activities?
A great question, Yvonne, and I can answer that. I was actually just talking to our Vice President of Training Operations, and we are in the process right now of testing a hiking harness made by Ruffler. And so it's been a little bit delayed to get that going, but they we're testing it so that we can, and we'll have some available. We're just getting the sizings right so we know how to advise people for sizing, because that is absolutely key when you're doing it. So so that's going on right now. So within the next couple of months, you should be hearing more from GDB on that. And I would advise you to kind of wait till that information comes out so that you can get, you know, the right sizing and, you know, be using it safely.
Okay, awesome. That's great news. Thank you.
Lisa, this is Michelle.
Michelle, what's your question?
I have Janie, and we just graduated in March. I was wondering, I have tried a cart. We have a tandem, and we got a dog cart at the same time as when we got the tandem. And I've tried it with a couple of my previous dogs, but they never got used to riding in the cart. They loved going in and out of the cart when it didn't have its wheels and it was stationary. But once it started moving, they started whining a lot. And so eventually we stopped tormenting our dog and the dog, and just had the dog stay home while we went hiking. But I was wondering, I know Jack mentioned that he has a cart for his dog, and I was wondering if there were any particular things that you did with your dog to help your dog get used to that motion of riding cart.
I think that was Jason.
Oh, Jason.
Janet. No, Janet.
Yeah, no, I said I was thinking about doing it, but I never quite figured it out.
Oh. Janet has it. Yeah.
I have, but didn't Jason say something about his dog being on the side?
No, I said I was playing with the idea, but I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Oh, okay.
When I run with my dog, but he's on a leash, So.
Yeah.
And to get him used to that kind of thing, I just, actually he came used to it. I asked GDB for a dog that I could take running, and they said sure.
You know, my first guide dog, when we would stop, he was fine when we were going. We would stop at a stop light or a, what would you call it, crosswalk, you know, and he would kind of sit up and he would make funny whiny noises. But he never, it sounded like he was upset, but I think he was really just really excited. Because he never refused to go in the cart, or, you know, when he got out, he was wagging his tail. When he never refused to get back in it, when we were ready to, you know, go again. And it was just when we would stop and get ready to start again, he'd kind of go, whoo, whoo, you know, and it was like, I think he was just excited. But I'm sure it's not for every dog, for sure. I haven't tried Vargo out in it.
My dog's whined while we were moving, and eventually I decided that they might not be too happy. And it was rather annoying to the people riding.
I just want to remind folks, too, if you're not asking a question, to put your phone on mute and then start to unmute. Do we have another question over there? I'm going to sort of a mini mute. So I can mute everybody, and if you want to unmute your line, try pressing *8.
Okay.
I don't think that works.
If you have a question.
Okay.
If you have a question, try pressing *2 to unmute your line.
Hello, this is DJ, and I had a question for the lady who was speaking about the archery. I don't plan on doing any international shooting, but years ago I used to shoot. I gave it up when I can't see anymore. My question is, number one, I had three questions. One, quickly, she said what her website was, but I can't remember all that. I was wondering if she could spell the website for me, or if it can go in somewhere into the minutes for this so I can look it up later. That was question one. Number two was the equipment that's special for targeting. You said there's nothing professional out there to order by, and basically you're going to need that. And I don't have a clue on where. That's part of the reason I kind of gave it up, because I couldn't get my laterally shooting. You could get the height by positioning, but as far as left to right, there's no way without something to target with. So I needed to find out about that, a little more information on that, how to go about getting something like that, because without it, there's nothing you could get. And my last question was, what were the distances that you shot?
Okay, good questions. The website is See No Limits, so it's SeeNoLimits.org. And as far as the equipment, if you were interested, my husband would make it for you, and you can contact me through my website, or it's, and Teresa, I don't know if you'll put this, out, but it's jwolf@seenolimits.org. So you can contact me that way. Where are you located?
I'm in California. My dog's Merrill.
Okay.
I got her guide dog for the blind.
I'm in California.
Los Angeles area.
Oh, okay. That's good that you're in California, because we would be able to support you, better, even though I'm up close to Sacramento, but still, that's good. If you just contact me through email, we can help you out. And your third question, I forget what your third question was.
The distances you used when you were shooting. 30, 50,
indoors,
30, 40,
indoors
50.
We shoot 18 meters, and outdoors, visually impaired shoot 30 meters.
Okay. I didn't catch your email address, ma'am, but is somebody keeping minutes that can be looked up on our OC Guide Dog alumni site?
Yeah, it's Teresa, and I can send, I was going to post something on the Guide Dogs website. But I can send it to, what's your name? It's DJ. What's your last name?
Junier. Dean Junier. I go by DJ. Dog's name's Merrill.
Merrill? Okay.
She's a yellow lab.
Can you tell me which? Well, I'll look up your email address, and I can send you Janice's.
I can call you, Teresa. I just didn't want to take up too much time in the conversation.
Okay, perfect. That would be awesome.
Thank you very much for all the information, everybody.
Could I ask a question now?
Go for it.
Hi, Teresa. It's Kathy from Ohio, and my guide dog's name is Hyatt. And Hyatt, my comment is Hyatt goes kayaking with my husband and me. And we put the kayak in the backyard, and I put treats in it, and we put a blanket in there, and she just loved it, and she would just sit in it and hang out in it. And so when we took it down to the beach, we live on Lake Erie, and we also have the Ashtabula River. And so when we took her down there, it was just she acted like it was no big deal. As soon as we get paddling, she lays down and goes to sleep. So it's really fun, but it's pretty limiting by weather too. So and we have a life jacket for her, of course.
Right.
So,
good.
It is fun. It is fun. But my question is to the gentleman who is going to do Kilimanjaro. I used to run, and I've had a knee replacement, so running days are over. So my I'm just getting back in shape, so I've been doing some walking with friends, and we're training for a half marathon walk. And but my husband needs a hip replacement, so as soon as he gets that done and is in back in shape, we want to do some serious hiking, because we have two sons who do a lot of backpacking, and they have mentioned to us Kilimanjaro. So I'm curious if you will be journaling your training, and if you could somehow stay in touch with us and let us know how your training's going, what you're doing, you know, to get in shape, how you've managed the altitudes and all of that. And, I'd like to follow along if there was a way.
I can give you another website.
We're at least 3 years out, because I know it will take my husband a while after his hip replacement to get back in shape. And I'm just 1 year out from my knee. So, you know, it's going to take us some time.
So I'll give you another website. It's www.teamlimitless.ca. So TAMLIT.
Okay. I didn't come prepared.
Limitless. Well, I'll send it out. It's www.teamlimitless.ca. And we're hoping to, although not official, we're entering into negotiations to maybe have a documentary done about
Wonderful.
What we're doing. It's not official, and it may not happen, but we're hoping that someone local will take up this project. We have someone who's we brought on board to help us try and get this project together, who's in the film industry, the documentary industry. So if that uh-huh. happens, that will be part of what we're doing. But one of our team members is a photographer who's partially sighted, and he also runs a drone business. So we're hopefully going to be having him film. We're going to put on our website. So I'll send it up. It's teamlimitless.ca.
Okay, great. Thank you.
But yes, you're welcome. So there's nothing that we're doing that's all that special right now. As we get closer, we're going to try and do more team activities, and we're going to have to find some way to figure out the altitude, maybe go to a higher level, or I don't know, Colorado, or I don't know. We have about a little over a year to do it. So it's a work in progress.
Right. Okay.
Sure. Good luck.
Thank you. And to you also.
Sure.
Well, guys, I think we have reached our limit. Speaking of Team Limitless, we've reached
yes.
our limit.
There you go.
There are some limits. I really, really want to thank each of our panelists today, Jason, Jack, and Janice, for inspiring us to get out and do stuff, whatever it is, and for sharing their stories with us. I also want to thank Amit Ahuja for putting together today's program. I really appreciate you doing that. Want to encourage everyone to remember to sign up for the reunion. Be fun to see everybody in Portland.
Yeah.
I am recording this, so this will go up on the GDB website under alumni, or under resources, and then under resources there's a thing that says resources for alumni. It'll be in there under the speakers series section. So if you want to go back to get some of those websites, whatever, that kind of thing. We're also trying to put together a little resource list with some of these resources that our panelists have put together. So hopefully the next week or so, we'll have that up on the website as well. So thanks for coming. Really appreciate it. Hope you guys all
have a
good rest of your week. Thank you.
And have a,
thank you.
A very active and safe
thank
summer.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.